Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show. What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm here with a very special temporary guest, Coach Nick.
Yay, Nick. Hi! Never no. Seen you before, never been here before. It's really awesome nice, to join in.
Nice to meet you, Nick. No, Nick, our co-host, welcome to the show. How are you doing today, Nick?
I'm really good. How about yourself?
I'm well. Nick, did you know this is our 19th Challenge Weekly Show?
Wow.
19. So if you're joining the Challenge Podcast for the first time, just know that there are 18 other episodes where we have met for the first time.
Yeah.
And we chat about things.
That's right.
Within our podcast, there's close to 100, I think almost closer to 200 different podcasts to listen to. So If you've just joined us for the Challenge Podcast first episode, make sure you go and spend a few hours listening to our previous episodes where we've spoken to other special guests, we've spoken to previous top 10s, and even done certain small monologues talking about certain ideas as well. So Challenge Podcast, lots of free education coming into your earbuds right now.
That's right. Chances are if you've got any questions, we've probably touched on them at some point throughout our various podcasts. Good library.
Now, Nick, at the time of recording this, we're the Tuesday, 25th of May, and it's week two of the challenge. So exciting times in the challenge, of course, like always, the theme of the week being nutrition. So lots of information on the challenge website about nutrition, talking about calories, talking about macros, talking about nutrition timing, talking about all the good bits and pieces about nutrition. And next week, our theme of the week turns into supplements, where we talk a lot more about supplements on the challenge website. So if you're doing the challenge, make sure you head on over to the challenge website and start digesting the nutritional information.
Yeah, heaps of it, plenty of it.
Now, Nick, before we talk any more about challenge-related things, I think it was an exciting weekend for you, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
Well, tell us, what happened on the weekend?
Well, currently, you can't see me, but I'm still orange, sort of orange, because I did my competitions. So, that was fun, and I got 2 silvers, actually 3 silvers, but I left one behind because they did the category so quickly that I had to put it to the side of the stage. So I did that. So obviously I'm going to have another crack to see if I can get a gold. So it was good though.
So you had 2 competitions, one on Saturday, one on Sunday.
Yes. So back to back, that was quite taxing on the body. Yes. Mm-hmm. So very interesting times with trying to make sure that I could look my best for 2 days in a row. Because when you get to that sort of level, it's easy to look bad as well. Like there's different things that you need to do. So it's all very pointy and stuff. But I made it. I'm alive. I'm here. So you're if here. I forget my name during the podcast, I need some more calories. So it's good that we're talking about calories today because I'm going to be needing some of those calories. So it's all about now time for me to build, which is a fantastic phase. It's my favorite thing to do because it just means training and eating. So I'm going to be like you.
Like me.
Yeah.
Good luck. We're going to grow to gold.
Yeah.
Grow to gold. Grow to gold. Yeah.
But yeah, so we might be able to do a deadlift together.
We'll chat.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
He doesn't want to do it. He's going to wait until I don't look like a praying mantis to see. But yeah, that's what we're going to do.
Maybe we'll sort out like a Wilks off. Like we'll calculate our Wilks score and then we'll see who has the better deadlift.
It has to be because you are 100 kilos.
Yeah, I'm going to have to lift like 250 or something to combat anything.
I think you are, but you can do that, can't you?
Well, the most I've actually pulled is 230.
Yeah.
Right. And that was a few years ago. I haven't really maxed out a deadlift in a while. So
yeah.
I think it's time. It's time, you know, time to test it.
Mm. I think you and I would be very similar.
Mm.
So you're thinking, no way.
Yeah. No, I think our works will be very close, especially your body weight, my body weight. Well, look, I've got to strive for this quarter ton. I think it's about time I've got to go get it.
Well, at least we can have a little goal together that's something fun. And yeah, you guys, I'm sure we'll figure out a way to Broadcast it.
We'll sort something out.
Yeah.
Well, if I'm going to go for the quarter ton, what are you aiming for?
Look, I think for me, if I could pull 150, 155, I reckon we'd be happy. I mean, I don't think in the time frame that I've got, I don't think I could get to 160. Mm. I don't think I could do it. But never say never.
Never say never. Yeah.
Yeah, never say never. I've got to get rid of these nails, though. They're giant claws. So that's not good for the grip.
Can't really hook grip with that.
No. No. But, yeah, that would be my goal, I would say. And I think that that would pretty much do it for me.
Is that a PB? Would that be a 160 PB?
It wouldn't be a PB, but it would be a PB if it depends how much body weight I gain in the next, like, 4 or so weeks. I'm not guessing it's going to be a massive amount. In fact, for this competition, I may as well try and keep it as low as possible. Because then you have to
lift less. Yes. Yeah, okay. Yes. Maybe I'll just have to go through a little mini cut and just lose a little bit of body weight to increase my Wilks, right?
But see, your power and strength would be fantastic because you've actually been eating quite a bit. Whereas, see, I've been in a deficit for a while. My strength isn't huge, but it's a great goal to have. So stay tuned, everybody, for our little competition.
It's going to be good. It's going to be good.
We're not competitive at all, are we?
No, not at all. How we got this role.
No.
No, look. It's been great observing the challenge at the moment. You know, we're on week 2 of the challenge. So the challenges currently on our Facebook group, on Instagram, on the forums, in the journals, posting a lot. And basically, the only way to describe it is hustling. Everyone's getting involved. Everyone's posting their meal prep. Everyone's posting them training. Everyone's getting involved in our daily themes such as Flex Friday and
motivation
and such. So it's great to see that everyone's getting involved into the process of the challenge. And you know, week 2 is still that honeymoon phase. So it's great to reflect now on what it's going to be like when it gets tough in that, you know, week 6, week 7, week 8, when you know, you've kind of, it's not new anymore. Right now, the challenge is exciting. It's new. Every workout's a little bit fresh and exciting. But when we go into that, you know, week 6, 7, 8, 9, it's almost like that grind where we just kind of have to, like, just keep on pushing through. So try to reflect now and plan now what's going to happen when you're in the future, right? And then think about the times now, about how good you feel now. And hopefully this good feeling helps push you through that grind later.
That's right. And that's where you've really got to visualize the end and remember your why. So why are you doing it?
Yep.
It needs to be for yourself, not for anyone else, really.
That's right. That's right. Now, Nick, you know, we're always here to help people, right? In any medium that we can.
Yes.
And we need to make it clear that, you know, Nick and I definitely want to help you as long as you're communicating to us, right? Sometimes in the magic of the internet, we get lost up in public forums, such as places like our Facebook support group. And that leads to a place where we find lots of crowdsourced information, right? And sure, sometimes in a crowdsourced information, you can find an adequate answer. It's like, you know, the Wikipedia theory, where if you go to Wikipedia, it'll probably give you a really good guide because it's crowdsourced information, because it's been filtered to create some sort of correctness. But if you went to a space like, I don't know, Reddit, and you posted a question, you're going to get thousands of just comments and opinions from people where you might be better off going and seeking help from a professional. Right?
That's right.
So we are seeing quite a few people reaching out on places like our Facebook group or like on our Instagrams and such to just the general public. And sometimes these questions are of a medical nature. Maybe they're related to medical diseases or injuries that definitely need help beyond of what the challenge can provide, where you might need to go see a doctor or a physio or an osteo or someone similar, right? And sometimes the questions are within our scope that Nick and I can help you with. However, in that public forum, like on our Facebook group, we don't get to see all the questions, and sometimes we're not on Facebook because we're doing other things like this podcast, right?
Exactly.
Where you might be getting answers from other people just like you who might not be giving the best advice possible. So if you have any questions, queries, doubtful points, anything related to fitness, health, a challenge, or anything in between, reach out to us on the forum. So within 24 hours, you'll get an answer either from myself or Nick or one of our ambassador team, or at least somebody to give you a correct answer that we can authenticate and say, yep, this is the best advice that we can provide you within the challenge group.
And don't stress, it's quite quick. The turnaround's quite quick because we do look at it frequently.
And you know, some questions might be better suited for like a public forum. Like, let's say, oh, what's the best source to put on your stake, right? Yes. Sure, that question might be better suited for like a public forum because it's just everyone's advice and opinion. What's the best Tupperware to get for your meal prep? Those types of questions.
What sort of leggings do you like to wear?
Great, happy days. Yeah. But then if it's a question like, oh, I think my fiber is too high and it's causing me to be bloated, it's like, okay, maybe it's best to go down a path of a broad question like on our forum so that, you know, Coach Nick or myself or one of our ambassadors can guide you on where to go from there.
That's okay? Right. Yeah. And we, if something's outside of our scope, we will just let you know as well because, you know, there's certain medical questions that we're not qualified to answer. So we'll certainly point you in the right direction.
Yeah. Mm. Now, look, Nick, let's go on to our next segment, which we are calling non-scale victories.
NSVs.
NSVs, yay. Non-scale victories. Because sometimes our victory isn't purely on the scale, isn't really weight related. Sometimes it's you know, things to do with our life and things to do with our mindset, our general health and well-being, or even just our relationships, right? So the first non-scale victory goes out to Brooke Schrempf. Hopefully I pronounced your name correct, Brooke. But Brooke made a post on our Facebook group where she was highlighting that she lost 47 kilos over the past 16 months. So starts off as a scale victory. But then she goes on to explain that over that period of 16 months, she reflected and found her to be just a better person. So she was explaining how she's a better mom, she's a better partner, she's a better friend, she's no longer angry and depressed and frustrated and all these bits and pieces, all because she started to put herself as a priority and, you know, started to lose that weight. And now she's a different person. So congratulations to Brooke and thank you for sharing that with us on our Facebook group. You're our first non-scale victory.
Absolutely. That's very inspiring. And our second one is Amy McCartney. We loved your improvised 3 kilo kettlebell that you made out of a milk container. That was really, really good because, it doesn't matter really what it is that weighs 3 kilos as long as you're lifting 3 kilos. So we love that. Very creative, cute, and awesome.
I like it. It was very MacGyver. Yeah. You know? Yeah. So the next one goes out to Amanda Peters. So Amanda Peters, both on our Facebook group and our Instagram. So she's squats, not cupcakes, right? I like that.
Me too. Name,
yeah. So she, Amanda's been around the challenge since I think it was like 2016, right? A little bit before my time. And she made a post describing that it was always one of her goals to get in the top 50. Right, and she might have missed out on top 50 for whatever reason. Maybe the competition was really high and it was difficult to get in the top 50. Or maybe over the course of 4 or 5 years of her completing the challenge, you know, she slowly built up skills and got better and better doing the challenge. And she got into the top 50 for the first time in the January challenge. And she was posting that, yes, that was one of her big goals, and she was really excited that she finally got that top 50 t-shirt. So non-scale victory for achieving your goals and showing us that, you know, if you don't achieve it the first time, you know, you can keep getting better and better and better at it and eventually reach your goals.
And that's the perfect mindset. So the next one we've got and the final one is Lisa Ruggiero. So Lisa, I know, she's Italiano. She went to her friend's house and so she still socialized. She didn't stop socializing. But when she went there, she just had a cup of coffee rather than indulging in some pretty nice cheese that was happening at her friend's house. So I love, firstly, that she had the mindset and discipline to decide not to do that at the moment because it didn't serve her goals, but also still found a way to interact and be social because we want you to make this part of your lifestyle. We don't want you to cut yourself off from the entire world. So I love that. And I love the fact that also she posted about it to make it more relatable just to everybody else because everybody can relate to that. When you go to somebody's house and there are things on offer and the person's made a really big effort to welcome you and she managed to navigate that, still have a friend, and walk away with no cheese this time.
No cheese.
No cheese.
No, so good. Look, congratulations, girls, for making our non-scale victories this week. And, you know, if you want to be featured with our non-scale victory segment, tell us about it. So yeah. Post about your non-scale victory on Facebook, on Instagram, on our forums, in your journal. We'll seek through them and we'll be highlighting some non-scale victories each and every week.
Yep, because we love those.
We love non-scale victories.
We sure do.
Look, Nick, let's talk about our Coach's Corner where we offer some tips. So I'd like to speak a little bit about my tip for the week, which is just some general advice about shoes.
Yes, okay? Go for it.
So over the past maybe 12 months even, I've become really interested in feet, mm-hmm. right? Some people say I'm a bit strange with my foot obsession, especially around barefoot training, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've become really interested in different types of footwear. So much so that I spend a lot of my time reading podiatrist-related evidence and research and follow a lot of podiatrists on social media, such as the Foot Collective and My Foot Function and stuff like that on Instagram. And right now, for me, I wear a lot of barefoot shoes. So shoes with a wide toe box to allow my toes to splay out so that I can have a wide base of support. So my toes are really wide and people make fun of my toes. Who cares? Mm-hmm. Screw you. Compared to a really narrow toe box where my toes are cramped and compressed, where I might be walking on like a tightrope. Okay. Yeah. So my advice for you is to consider the shoes that you're wearing. So firstly, we can consider the toe box. The toe box is where our toes are. And are your shoes a really narrow toe box where your toes are compressed, or do your shoes have a wider toe box where your toes can actually splay out? This then translates a little bit into the socks that you wear. So right now I wear toe socks. So I've got I got those socks where I put my toes into each little hole and it takes me a few extra seconds to put my socks on in the morning. But that allows my feet to be more spread out throughout the day. One, I don't really get that foot pain and those foot aches that I used to have. Two, when I'm in the clinic treating people, I can stand up all day and not have that lower back pain that we're all familiar with, because my feet can actually spread out, really close link between your feet and your hip function. And three, they're really comfy, right? So firstly, toe box. Next, we need to consider the shoes that we're wearing when we're weightlifting, okay? So we can look at the thickness and the shape of the sole of our shoe, mm-hmm. right? And this gets important when we consider something like a deadlift. So some running shoes have lots of padding around the heel,
yeah.
and they're shaped in this kind of like bow shape, right? Mm. So that what happens is when you strike your foot on the ground, the compression in the shoes helps propel you forward, and the shape of the sole actually helps you to roll so that you can keep on running. Right? Great for running. However, when we're deadlifting, we want to be quite stable. So the first problem we face is if there's lots of padding in our shoe, it's like you're basically standing on like a Bosu ball,
yeah.
right? You're basically standing on a big thing of like bubble wrap. So of course you're going to lose stability with the ground. You're basically standing on a big cushion, right? So that loses your power, loses your stability. You aren't able to create force. Like that analogy of a canoe with a cannon on it, right? You can't really create force. That cannon won't be able to fire if the canoe is all unstable, mm-hmm. right? So we want to be stable on the floor. Next, you know, considering that arch in the sole, and I'm talking about that big bend, you know, those like, you know, Nike Adidas shoes that are like super bendy. What happens is when you put pressure through that foot, it's going to move your foot onto the ball of your foot. So when you're deadlifting, as you push through the ground or as you're picking up load, what's going to happen is your foot is going to want to start moving towards the ball of the foot. Of course, you're going to be off balance. That's the same as squats and stuff. So you can imagine when you're going down into, let's say, a squat, as you go to stand up and pushing through your feet, your body weight's going to shift forward, so you're going to lose balance. You're going to tilt forward, right? So then we get this really off-centered and misbalanced squat pattern. You lose power. So my advice for you with shoes is to, one, either go barefoot, because barefoot can be a good alternative. You start strengthening the muscles in your feet. Mm-hmm. They can be a limiting factor because, okay, you're in a commercial gym and you might not be able to take your shoes off, the floor is dirty, those types of things. Okay, I understand that. If you're at home, train barefoot. You might see some improvements in other body aches and pains like knee pain, hip pain, lower back pain.
Yeah. I can't really train with my shoes on when I'm doing
those types of movements. Yeah. yeah.
Even squats, you know, yeah. I mean, I do have squat shoes. I do have the special ones,
mm-hmm.
but I've tried to wean myself off them.
Yeah.
Just cause. Yeah.
Because the next step would be to look at lifestyle shoes. So you see many lifters opt for, let's say, like the Converse All-Stars, right? Or Rideaway, like yeah, certain boots or like even, yeah. or even just like wrestling boots where they have a really, 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 really thin sole and it's flat. And it's just lifestyle shoes.
That's right. Yeah. So they're not too bad. No. But it really depends on, you know, your budget and things, because you may as well just have bare feet.
And sometimes, you know, we need to get a blend where we don't expect you to bring two different types of shoes to the gym. Well, one for a little bit of cardio and two while you're doing heavy squats. So, okay, can we get a little bit problematic? I do. Right.
Well,
most of us do.
I don't mind bringing all the shoes because sometimes you need your tools, because the thing is, like, just say you were doing boxing, you'd have your gloves. Mm-hmm. So shoes are tools as well. They are. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we don't expect it.
And then the next step, a little bit more higher in the budget, would be what Nick alluded to, which would be lifting shoes.
Yeah.
Right. So of course you can get a whole range of different styles of lifting shoes or different heights in the heels. A good place to start if you're thinking about getting some lifting shoes is maybe like an Addi Power. They have a really small, I think it's maybe a quarter inch heel, so that can allow you to get a little bit deeper in your squat because it takes away some of the ankle mobility required. Or you can go on the extreme end where you go maybe like a one inch heel, which is something like the new Nike Romalos. I think they're like number 4. I've got a pair of those, but they've got a really narrow toe box, really great for Olympic lifting, but a little bit challenging if you're just going to be doing lots of squats. So you might find new knee pain because you're using a lot of quadricep through those movement patterns. Yeah. So they're things that you might work your way into if they're related to your goals. But often with weightlifting, if you're using very generic like runners, they might not be helpful for lifting heavier weights, and you might be better just taking them off or just wearing like lifestyle shoes, like little slip-ons or something like that.
Definitely.
But that's my coach's corner. Think about your shoes, go barefoot, free the toes, and you'll see some changes in your body.
Yeah, if you're in the gym going barefoot, if you're allowed to, just be aware of the space around you and don't drop anything on your feet. But you sort of get used to it after a while, and it's very empowering.
I still think that even just a little bit of cloth around your shoes, like let's say the shoes that we're both wearing right now, that's not really going to protect you from 20 kilos, 10 kilos.
I agree, right? 100%. If you're going to drop it, you're going to drop it. It's going to get squashed either
way. Even like 5 kilos, dropping that on your feet, like your shoes, unless they're steel cap boots, like not going to do much for you, especially those runners. So, just don't drop weights on your feet.
Just don't be clumsy.
Well, look, all right, Nick, what's your coach's corner tip?
Okay, listen up, people. So we're talking about non-linear weight loss. So this is a question that I reckon comes up on the forum or Facebook group pretty much every day, where somebody says, I have gained specific amount of weight overnight. People freak out. People freak out at numbers if the scale goes up, unless you're actually looking for the scale to go up. But you don't hear many people saying, I've lost that overnight. So we don't tend to celebrate that as much, because people when people do that, they'll actually go, oh, that's because I've done this and this and this. It's just people freak out the other way. So they might go, I've lost a kilo. Oh, that's because I drank a lot of water last night or something. People sort of understand that one, but not as much about if. So let's just talk about if the scale goes up. So sometimes you could one day have a lower measurement, and then the next day it could go up by 1 or 2 kilos even, and that is because so many different factors. So let's talk about firstly the one that women need to know about, which is your menstrual cycle, but not just your menstrual cycle, also ovulating. So ovulation makes your weight go up as well. Different times of the month for women. Then we've also got, what have you eaten the night before? So what time are you weighing yourself? Have you had a lot of salt in your foods? Have you had alcohol? So many things can cause your body to retain water. If you've had more carbohydrates the day before you weigh yourself, that will also cause you to retain water in your muscles. It's actually, Steve, did you know it's impossible to put on a kilo of body fat overnight, really?
Yeah,
it is. Did you know that? Yeah. So you've got to stop thinking, I suppose, of the scales and weight loss about fat.
Here's my butt, though. If we look at like a kilo of fat, right? So a kilo of fat, correct me if I'm wrong, is, something like 3,500 calories or something like that, right? So if you were in a calorie surplus of like 3,500 calories, then maybe potentially you might have put on a kilo of body fat.
But then that would
there's the only caveat.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, like that would then assume that not one single section of that has gone towards muscle growth.
That's if you're in a surplus. Yeah. So if you were, let's say, had a maintenance calories of 2,000 calories, and then you ate then 5,500 calories in one specific day with no other metabolic adaptation, then maybe you can make that claim.
Yeah.
So,
true. That's the only caveat. That's true. But like within the context of this, I'm doubting that anyone's in that much of a surplus. So, okay, if you are, and you're freaking out, then maybe, yeah, just cut the calories back a little bit to your plan and you should be on your way again. So,
yeah.
But other than that, look, even, look, if the scale goes up one time, it'll probably go down the day after. But I personally believe that you shouldn't really celebrate either one until you see a trend. So you've got to track every day. I believe that the scales are a tool, just like your food scales are a tool. It's just a number. So if it goes up, then don't be too attached to that. If it goes down, don't be too attached to that. I personally like to see a weekly average. That's me. Some other people might like to do a monthly average. You know, it's whatever works for you. But, yeah, my tip would be not to get too caught up with fluctuations in weight, particularly if you are attempting to gain muscle, because that's a very long-winded process and it takes a lot of dedication. So you are going to see scale fluctuations all the time with that as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think at this stage of the challenge, it's tricky because, you know, we started the challenge and we get a lot of like low-hanging fruits, right? And what I mean by that is, you know, you begin the challenge and you kind of cut out a lot of like, quote, junk foods and you maybe quit drinking, you start going to the gym a little bit, you start eating a little bit more fruits and vegetables and you start drinking a bit more water. So you grab lots of low-hanging fruits and are moving in a positive direction. So that may mean that you lose 2, 3, 4, 5 kilos in 1 week, which is awesome to see. But then what happens is you can't expect that to be linear. You can't expect that weight loss to happen forever. And then you may be watching somebody else who's gone through that process. You don't know that they've had a really poor lifestyle, that they have maybe been drinking previously, having pizza every night and never going to the gym. And then you getting upset that that person's lost 5 kilos when you've been training for 5 years and you're going, wow, have I done something wrong because I haven't lost 5 kilos in 1 week? So firstly, we need to be careful that we're not comparing our weight loss with other people. And then secondly, that we don't get too excited about rapid weight loss because it's unlikely that that's body fat. Often it's two categories, one being gut residue, which you mentioned, you know, what food have you eaten? Right? Or two would be water retention. So how much water are you holding in your subcutaneous tissue within body fat or within muscle as well? And that can happen from a range of factors such as like what you mentioned, Nick, sodium, carbs, creatine, menstrual cycle, cortisol, those types of stuff. Right? I generally believe the best way to measure your body weight changes is through a weekly average. We know that our body weight's going to fluctuate up and down. And if you measure yourself in a like a low state, if you kind of imagine a zigzag and you measure yourself in this low area and then you measure yourself a few days later and now you're in this like upper area of the zigzag, you're going to feel disheartened that you've gained 600 grams. But if you were to measure it every single day and then look at the zigzag and be like, oh, actually it's trending downwards, that's more powerful than those single changes.
Definitely. Yeah. And don't also forget that there are other ways to measure what's progress. Going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can look at your clothes, photos, waist measurements. So there are other ways. And people do often say the scale has gone up, but my measurements are down and I feel stronger. So straight away, that's a non-emergency to me. I go, winning, very good. Very good, because there are other parameters to look at.
So good.
You were saying, yeah, the scale has gone up, my waist measurement has gone up, my clothes don't fit me anymore, unless you're specifically going for some muscle gain, then we'd have to look at what's going on after a while, not just from the first time you said it.
Yep, no, I agree. All right, so let's answer some questions that have come up over the past week or some other kind of common questions. So I'll start with the first one, where we often get questions about training splits. All right, so the question might be, you know, why is our program mostly full body training? Why is our program not a, you know, insert this or like an upper lower split or a bro split or every single muscle group trained every single other day kind of splits. And let's break it down. So most of our programs are full body based programs. So we need to first understand fitness culture, fitness history, where the first fitness based programs were full body programs. For most of fitness history, training programs have been full body programs. Most athletic and strength and conditioning programs are full body programs, right? You know, try to think about the way that an Aussie Rules football player would train for their sport they're doing full body training, right? So athletes are training their full body, right? Now, split programs became popular in like the golden era of bodybuilding, so the times of Arnold and such, right? Where they were posting in magazines about different body part splits, where that's actually a very small sliver of fitness history, right? And the idea was that when you train a single body part, you're able to add more volume to that specific body part, which adds more levels of fatigue. And that was under a pretense where we believed that muscles, you needed to generally cause trauma and damage to a muscle for it to grow, as opposed to what we know now. So this was often misleading advice. And of course, that became fitness mainstream, right? And now it's this idea that we need to have a bicep day, we need to have a back day, we need to have a quads day. We need to have a legs day, because somehow all the legs muscles get categorized on one day, but then you have a bicep day as well, right? So the body doesn't really work like that. So the body, you know, there's lots of co-contracting muscles at the same time. Imagine something like a bent over row. Most of us will be like, yeah, that trains your back. It's like, well, okay, there's lots of muscles in the back. It also trains your biceps. Mm. It also trains the triceps through extension in a very, very small amount, and a whole bunch of other muscles as well through that one movement pattern. So when we go and say, you know, this real simple mindset of going, oh, I'm just going to train my back, right, or my pecs, it's like, okay, are you then forgetting about all the other muscles that are involved with that? So most programs, even though they are split programs, now within fitness culture are full body programs anyway, because you're training all the muscles in your body, right? You can't really isolate one muscle. Anyway, I digress from that. So the reason why our programs are majority full body based programs is, firstly, one, that full body programs stimulate more muscle protein synthesis, or MPS. So after a bout of exercise or resistance training, there's a window of about 48 to 72 hours where the muscle protein synthesis, which is the rate that you grow muscle, is heightened, right? If we can, heighten for that muscle. So by training your muscle frequencies at a more frequent rate, we increase that muscle protein synthesis more so than just that one day. So if you train, let's say, legs on a Monday, right, your legs will then be growing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, maybe Thursday. Mm-hmm. But if you trained your legs Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, for example, and you split your volume over the whole week, then you're getting muscle protein synthesis almost every single day. So your legs are continuously growing. Okay, so that's number one. A little analogy there, and it's an anecdote, it's not completely true, is, you know, think about tradies, right? The tradies that you see with the biggest arms are those that are on the tools every day. Mm-hmm. It's not the, you know, subcontractor that comes in on the weekend to do the hard labor. It's the guys that are on there every single day, right? So that's the idea. We're trying to increase frequency. We know that higher amounts of frequency, of course, leads to better muscle protein synthesis, but then also better specificity through movement patterns. So if you're training your pecs every single day, you're going to get better at that movement pattern of pecs rather than training them on one day. Then we go through this idea of junk volume. So often when we see training programs of people before the challenge, they'll be doing something like 40 sets of exercise on one muscle group per day, which is just too high.
Yeah.
So what tends to happen is the first maybe 1 to 5 sets, they're training at 100% effort. And then maybe when they get to sets number 5 to 10, they're training at about 90% effort. And then when they're training, the sets 10 to 15, then maybe at 70% effort.
Hmm.
Well, of course, they're probably going, you know, as much as they possibly can, but they're getting tired.
It's inevitable.
It's inevitable. So that person might be training, you know, 30 sets of chest exercises in one session. But then what ends up happening is once they get to those last 5 sets, you know, they're training at an effort of like 30%, and that's just junk volume. They're just making themselves tired. They're not getting any meaningful work.
Mm.
If you were then to spread out that 30 sets across an entire week, we get the same amount of volume on that muscle, right? But then we save some of the fatigue so that we don't actually get experienced DOMS as much. So instead of doing 30 sets of chest where we're dipping down into this fatigue level really low, we're then doing maybe 5 sets of chest every day for the whole week. So then we're saving our recovery, but then we're also triggering more muscle protein synthesis, having higher frequencies, and then training at a higher intensity because we're less tired through the pec movement, and then we can train other body parts as well. So it's tick the box, win, tick the box, win, tick the box, win. And then probably the final one that I'll touch on is that if you miss a training session on a full body program, your program isn't then ruined. So if you're training a muscle split and you miss legs day because you're stuck at work or your kid's sick and you can't get to the gym or something like that, you then don't get to train legs for another whole week, mm. right? So then it's becoming like, you know, 2 weeks until you've trained legs again. So mm. you're missing out on lots of gains
yeah.
through that lower body. And some people, that legs day ends up being that day that we skip frequently, yeah. right? But if we were doing a small amount every single day, then it's something that's achievable, manageable. And if we miss a day, it's okay. We jump back on, we keep on going.
It's like
okay.
an insurance policy it for is. Your body.
It is. So there's lots of reasons why we do it. Maybe because you know, there is quite a bit of research that supports full body training over split training. Sure, there's a little bit of a caveat where maybe those advanced individuals might benefit from slightly body split training because they're able to apply stimulus that can continue to see growth. Of course, there's that caveat there, but most of us aren't really training at an advanced level. Most of us are around this like late intermediate, early advanced, where we probably benefit from a full body program more so than a split program. Remember that the challenge, we're trying to challenge you and your current systems. So most of us aren't training full body, and you might benefit and see some changes in your body by training, by changing your split up. Now, if your preference is to train bicep day, back day, legs day, you can do that, right? Our training programs are really flexible. You can change the split around. But I'm going to challenge you to challenge yourself and follow our full body programs, and you might be surprised at what happens to your body.
Yeah.
Whew, that was love a good answer. Lots to talk about. All right.
You convinced me.
Whew, full bodies. All right. So, Nick, would you like to take our next question? So
yes.
This next question comes up frequently, and it often starts off with misunderstanding around nutrition, where people get caught up around the individual food items. For example, should I have chicken breast or chicken thigh? I heard that chicken thigh was bad for you.
Mm-hmm.
Or should I have white rice or brown rice? I heard that brown rice was better for you, right? So when somebody asks this type of question, what kind of answer would you give them, Nick?
Well, the thing is, let's go broad. Let's go really broad. Let's just say, let's just put it out there, there's no such thing as a good food or a bad food. Why would I say that? Why would I say that? Because let's think about it. Let's do one of your analogies. Just say that you had a budget. You had a budget to spend during the day. That's the same as with your calories. So if you had money, you have a certain amount of money to spend before you go broke. Think of your calories like that as well. It really actually doesn't matter what you spend your calories on as long as you stay within your budget. And it's as simple as that for weight loss. It's you want to consume less calories than you expend. So the way that our program is designed, we actually do the hard work for you, because say with chicken thighs, yes, they do have more calories, so you would be spending a little bit more of your budget, but it's already calculated. The weight is already calculated against a chicken breast. So yeah, if you wanted to eat if you wanted to eat three Snickers bars for your calories for the day, or probably you could even eat more. They're not that calorific, really. I mean, they're expensive in the budget. You could. We run into problems there with thinking that we can just eat those types of foods simply because they won't provide you with lasting energy. So if we look at food quality, that's where we need to be a little bit smarter with our budget and decide ultimately what we want to spend it on. But look, you could fit anything you like into your calorie budget and still drop weight. That's the bottom line with calories. Calories in versus calories out. So if you're new to this, that's all you've got to understand. Calories in versus calories out. That's why we say do your steps as well. That's so then you can have ultimately. It's also, the thing is, look, say with a meal plan, very important to stick to it until you get to the point where you understand budgeting. Then you can kind of have a little bit more free rein. And I know that there'll be some people that go, I just want to stick to it, I'm not ready yet. And some people that go, oh, I didn't really think of that, I can fit something in there. But look, our meal plans even have ice cream. You've just got to look at the value of each item. So if you start to think of the value of each item contributing towards your budget for the day, then you can also decide, do I want to have that? Do I want to spend my budget on that? Or do I want to spend it on something that's a little bit more, say, higher in nutrients, nutrient dense? So say the difference between brown rice and white rice might be that, look, to be honest, there's not a lot of difference, but it could be that there's more you know, micronutrients in brown rice. But in terms of what it's actually going to do for you for performance, like carbohydrates, that sort of thing, there's no difference.
No, no.
So, yeah.
Good answer. Good answer. But I think some of us get caught up in that, like, calories in, calories out mindset where it goes, oh, well, okay, I guess I can have Fruit Loops for breakfast and chocolate pudding for lunch. And then for dinner, I can just have, you know, like a sandwich or something like that, right?
Yeah, but your budget runs out really quickly. Because I reckon everyone's, I mean, when I first discovered, I guess, that idea of calories in, calories out at some point, I was like, oh, well, I'm going to play with this and I'm going to have everything I've ever wanted to have. And then suddenly, like by midday, like, well, I've run out of my calorie budget. Yeah. So you've got to be really careful with that.
Yeah. So I think problems you face with that, like if it fits your macros idea, is that, you know, you could be within the budget, but then you realize you're having very small volumes of food. So you get to the end of the day and you've eaten that many calories, but you're like, oh, geez, I'm really hungry because you've eaten a very small amount, right? You compare, you know, 100 calories of lettuce versus 100 calories of chocolate. They're very two different sizes of food, right?
They are. And the lettuce, I mean, as we've seen some people who are using all of their lettuce allowance in a salad. You see how you get a massive salad, you know. It's really interesting to learn the values of your calories and the budget, because that could that actually equates to about two or three squares of chocolate. So that's where also say with the almond milk, that versus the say I think it's 200 mils, for regular milk. So that's where if you start to learn your values, if you learn your budget, you will actually start to understand that, that there's no good or bad foods. They're just worth more or less in your daily budget.
I like that. Especially when we're considering purely weight loss, body composition, right? Maybe a different conversation if we're trying to you know, optimize our overall health. Of course, we're going to want to be having more whole foods, fruits and vegetables, these types of things in our life. Or if we're trying to be a high-level athlete, like trying to beat someone in a deadlift, right? We want to be having like better quality foods so that we can have all those vitamins, minerals that come with that,
We don't want to eat, say, a donut. Like if I'm going to try and beat you in the deadlift, I don't want to eat a donut for breakfast because by the time I get to the gym to see you, I won't have any energy left. I'll just be exhausted. My body will have used up all the sugar and I won't be able to perform the way that I would like to perform. So
that's why you're going to try to beat me. But when I beat you, I won't be having that. So that's okay.
I don't know what you're saying. I don't understand. I'm not sure. I don't hear you. So on to the next point.
All right. So look, I want to talk a little bit about questions related to bloating. So we often get questions around bloating, often at the start of the challenge, usually within that first maybe 2, even 4 weeks, where challenge would write something almost in a very you know, frantic way online, you know, using lots of exclamation marks and capital letters, something along the lines of, I'm bloated, what do I do? Right. And this is so common that it's probably at the top of our FAQ section and found in a few different areas of our programs and online. So bloating, very normal response to our body. Okay. It's difficult to give you good advice around bloating because there's a few different factors that can happen. Right. So first and foremost, probably like the big reason why you'd experience bloating is mainly around our fiber intake. Okay. Often when we move into a new diet, especially a weight loss diet and the challenge diet, we're starting to eat more fruits and vegetables. And we all know that fruits and vegetables are higher in fiber than other foods, right? So imagine comparing, you know, a slice of white bread, really low fiber, versus, you know, like an apple, really high fiber. Now, we know that fiber doesn't get digested in our body and that stays in our large intestine for our gut bacteria to slowly break down. So if we are having a very rapid increase in fiber, our gut bacteria don't really know how to digest that yet. And that leads to over-fermentation of that food, which leads to flatulence and bloatingness. So you might feel that experience of bloatingness simply because you're having more fruits and vegetables in your life. Okay, so that's probably first and foremost number one. Now, that often doesn't last very long as our gut bacteria begins to change to be able to digest those foods better. We begin to metabolize it better and then our bloating symptoms decrease. So that can be a way of simply saying, you know, you're going to adapt to that. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, closely linked to that fruits and vegetables, is you might actually find that with the increases in fruits and vegetables, you've discovered a new intolerance to certain dietary sugars that are found in fruits and vegetables. Mm. We label this FODMAPs, yeah. Right? And you may be consuming a food that's a higher FODMAP and you didn't know previously that you were sensitive to FODMAP fruits and vegetables because maybe you weren't having those types of fruits and vegetables. Now, unfortunately, that's very much outside of the scope of the challenge and you will need to go see someone like a dietitian to determine if you would benefit from like a lower FODMAPs diet. Many people self-diagnose and go onto a low FODMAPs diet and report that they feel better. That may be simply because those foods are easier to digest, but that doesn't determine if you are sensitive to those products or those sugars. And they're not sugar, sometimes get a bad rap, but you know, these are compounds that are found naturally in fruits and vegetables. The next idea would be certain other intolerances that you've picked up without knowing, such as lactose or gluten, maybe because you've introduced milk products or grain products which you weren't really having previously, so that may cause an episode of bloating. The next one could be some of our supplements, such as whey protein concentrate or casein protein. Some of those can be difficult to digest, especially in the certain populations who have a certain gene enzyme, which I can't remember off the top of my head, but I'm one of them, right? So for me, if I have lots of whey protein concentrate or casein protein, I feel a little bit bloated, a little bit gassy, don't feel very, very good. So I opt to go for whey protein isolate, which is a little bit more filtered form of protein, and I'm fine to have that. So sometimes that's a problem that we face. Then we have protein intakes overall. So if you are having an increase or rapid increase of protein, higher than maybe like 3 grams per kilo of body weight, that can lead to some gastrointestinal complaints, such as bloatingness. And then finally, for women, if you are experiencing your menstruation or menstrual cycle, that can be the big reason why we're experiencing an episode of bloatingness.
Definitely. And we forget every month, I must say, as a woman, you actually just forget. You go, oh, that's right. It's just, it doesn't matter if you planned it, whatever. It's just, it's something that you forget and you can't believe that it's happening to you every single time.
Yeah.
So it's just random.
So look, just a super summary about fiber. If you are thinking that it is fiber, use our nutrition template, which has a little fiber calculator at the bottom. And if your meal is higher than probably like 20 grams of fiber per meal, maybe that fiber is too high. Try swapping it around for something that's less than 20 grams per meal. And then the total daily fiber intake, if you're having a fiber intake higher than about 50 grams, that's probably on the higher end and you may actually find some problems with things like constipation and such, okay?
Yeah.
So monitor that fiber. If you notice that it's really high, experiment, choose foods that are lower in fiber, and then see if that improves your symptoms as well.
Yeah, because that's all on the template anyway. So it's done for you. You can just rejig it with some other options. And yeah, that really might help you.
Yeah, because of course you can even go like that next step, a little bit more advanced nutrition timing. You know, if you're about to go train, you might benefit from a lower fiber food, so digest quicker, versus a higher fiber food, maybe times around your outside of your training window, so it can take a little bit longer to digest and such. So just interesting information just to start to take note of. You don't need to action it right now, but if you start reflecting on it, that might be a good way to progress your nutritional understanding.
Yes.
All right, Nick, do you want to finish us off?
Yes. Now, this is a question that comes up quite a bit. Can I have a glass of wine, one glass of wine, during the challenge? Now, the answer is it depends. Ooh. because it's going to depend on your lifestyle prior to the challenge. So if it's something, just say having a glass of wine is really, say, 2 bottles of wine, and only you will know this. So we don't know. We don't know what you mean by a glass, but if it's something that is sort of holding you back, if it's a limiting factor in maybe even your recovery and getting yourself into the gym, or if it leads to poor food choices as well, it may not be worth having. And also, if you can't stop at one, then it may be worth looking at just seeing what happens to your body when you get rid of it. But in terms of a glass of wine, it's the same idea as calories in, calories out. You can factor it in. It can be done. It can be done. And you heard it first here.
Yeah.
It can be, can't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a little bit contrary to popular advice
that we give. And we don't mean to go against it because, as I just said, it's completely dependent. That's not a license for you to go back onto your bottles of wine. It's for somebody who has control and knows how to stop at one. And, you know, it's not a huge part of your life. It's like if you think of alcohol and you go, meh, either way, that's sort of the person that can probably have one glass and it's not going to impact on your results, as long as you're not over your calorie allowance for the day, because it is actually a macronutrient, alcohol. Yes. So it's got calories. It needs to be factored in. It's digested differently by the body. It will certainly be the number one priority of the body once it's in there, because it's something it wants to get rid of. So if you're then having a burger with it, it's probably not going to serve your needs, but you can have one.
Mm. Yeah. You know, just adding on to that, like you said, Nick, while we're on the challenge, it probably isn't beneficial to have a drink, right? Like if you really want to get in the top 10, get the best results possible, really transform your body, you will probably benefit from not having a drink.
Simply right. Because it's probably wasted calories towards something that you could actually use in a food source to give you energy in the gym.
Exactly. And, you know, if we look at calories of, let's say, wine, for example, mm-hmm. like a glass of wine is coming too close to, you know, 200 plus calories, yes. right? So then you decide, all right, do I want to have, you know, a whole meal almost or one glass of wine, mm. right? And we know that if alcohol is factored into our calorie allowance, we don't see any big changes in weight loss or weight gain, right? If someone magically put on weight from drinking wine, I think we've solved the world hunger crisis, because then we just give everybody wine, they put on body fat, we've just created energy, you know, laws of thermodynamics, we've created energy, heck, we'll just create human farms where we feed them wine. It would be very dystopian, right? So it can't happen. So if you have a glass of wine, one, you're not a bad person, two, you're not going to instantly get fat, and then three, there's some interesting research now that suggests that, you know, having a glass of wine, if calories are equated, doesn't affect our muscle growth abilities or our strength performance. So we go, okay, if you were to have, you know, one beer on the weekend, or maybe, you know, on the next weekend it's your child's wedding, and then the weekend after is like a friend's birthday, and you choose to be conservative and have just one drink, you haven't fallen off the wagon. You're not a bad person if it fits within your calorie allowance. That's where we get problematic, because when we drink, we make bad decisions, right? We're more likely to have that burger and the fries and a dip afterwards, and then probably a bit of chocolate and the cake, and then have a second drink, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we make poor decisions. Then we deal with that hangover effect where we're not going to train as hard the next day.
We're hungry.
So there's negative effects that happen when we do have a drink. But within moderation, you could get away with having a glass of wine, you know, in moderation. Let's say even once a week, once a fortnight, something like that. But big but is that if you're doing the challenge, you would probably benefit from just abstaining and not having a glass of wine or any alcohol at all.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess if you were to ask any of the top 10s, they would probably say they did abstain, because that's that next level. That's that sort of pointy end where you really want to use your calories, every single calorie that you've got, to nourish your body.
That's right.
So we're not saying in any way that alcohol nourishes your body.
Yeah. But, you know, for those maybe like at the end of the challenge, you know, if you wanted to celebrate, have a drink, okay, go for it, right? You know, like I celebrated when, one, I got engaged, and two, when I found out I was having a child, right? Like, am I a bad person? No. Did I put on body fat? No. Did I lose any of my gains? No, I had a drink. Like, so what?
That's right. I
got straight back on and kept on going, right?
Definitely. So, and yeah, I think that that's the thing. To make this sustainable, you can't think about always cutting everything out, because there will be a point where you will break if it's something that's on your mind. So say to yourself, sure, I can, but I choose not to at this point. But then if you do, you're not a bad person, move on.
Yeah. So if you want to learn more about alcohol, I actually did a podcast all about alcohol, where it was called, You Booze, You Lose, right?
Yeah.
Where basically, I was speaking about the negative effects of alcohol, which we touched on a little bit today. You know, this advice now is actually an example of how the challenge grows, right? So, you know, Nick and I have been presented with new evidence, new research, and, you know, our opinions, not opinions, our advice that we give you slowly modifies and changes.
We have to. Yeah, it's very important to us that we are contemporary and we're right on top of everything that is released as research, because also we're interested, because we live and we're out in the world, and we love to train, and we love to get the best possible results for ourselves, but we also love to socialize and have a life as well that includes a variety of things. So we'll certainly let you know any updates.
Yeah. Now, of course, when you're thinking, oh, well, what drink can I have if I'm out?
Rushes out to buy a bottle.
Yeah. So I think wine is probably up there in the highest calorie-dense drinks. Next would be kind of like beers. Spirits can be quite low, especially if it's not mixed with anything. So if you want to have like a vodka lime soda, like that can be very low in calories.
Fresh lime.
Not the cordial lime. And vodka is really low in, I believe it's ethanol, meaning that you're less likely to get a hangover from vodka versus other spirits. So if you were out and about and you had to, you know, gun to the head, have to have a drink, something like a vodka with some soda could be an okay choice, which would be low in calories as long as you factor it into your entire daily budget of calories.
That's the whole thing. Right? You need to factor it in. It's not. You need to be so sensible with all of this. And we're giving you special information, but you need to not take it lightly.
Yeah. If you're brand new to dieting and you've got a lot of weight to lose, maybe abstaining from alcohol is probably the better option.
Yeah.
If you are more advanced and you have previous experience with dieting, maybe you could factor that in if you have that discipline.
Yeah, okay. 100%.
But look, Nick, let's wrap it up there for the Challenge Weekly Show number 19. Thank you to our very special temporary guest host.
I'll see you next week.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next week for episode number 20.
Bye, everybody.
Bye now.